Elah ha-Debarim asher diber Moshe. These are the words that Moses spoke. Today, Anne's requested that people from Teshuvah share something creative with the congregation. And we all have different ways of expressing ourselves. And one of the ways that I like to express myself sometimes is through poetry. Whether or not I'm talented is another matter. But with your permission, I thought I might share three or four poems of mine as my contribution to the service. In today's portion, we see Moses, who, having led God's people for the best part of 40 years, and knowing that he would shortly be parted from them, felt it incumbent upon himself to impart a final exhortation to the children of Israel. And thus we have the book of Devarim, or words. In keeping with this theme, the first couple of poems I would like to share were written by way of exhortation or encouragement for my eldest daughter, Abigail. As many of you will know, my first marriage ended in divorce after 5 years, and my daughter, who was quite young, was taken to Jersey. Obviously, my heart went with her, but how does one fulfil one's obligation to instruct one's children in the faith when they are parted from you? I had brought her a children's Bible, but as there was no one in her new home to encourage her to read it, I felt further impetus was required. The idea came to me one day that I should write her a short poem to help her to understand the importance of the Bible. So I put pen to paper and wrote the following lines. Please excuse their extreme simplicity and bear in mind that they're intended to convey the point of the Bible to a young child. It's called A Light in the Darkness. God's word is like a little light that helps us see which way to go. It helps us learn to do what's right and teaches what we need to know. Our faith is like a little seed which our Creator God did sow. And the Bible is the thing we need to help that little seed to grow. So take this little light with you, a guide and comfort in the dark. Be led by it in all you do to help you not to miss the mark. I wrote this out on a small roll of paper and slipped it around the battery cartridge of a small torch, rather like one I have here, and then I put it in the post. When I spoke to my daughter later that week via Skype, I asked her if she'd received it, to which she replied excitedly that she had, and that it had proven very useful. When I asked her what she meant by this, it turned out that when my parcel had arrived, its contents had attracted the ridicule of her mum and stepdad, who quipped that it wasn't like they didn't have electric lighting in Jersey, so why would Abigail be likely to need a torch? For those of you who don't know, Jersey is a small island in the English Channel, which, owing to its relationship to the UK and its own independent tax law, is something of a magnet for investors, and as a result is relatively wealthy, having one of the highest national income per capita in the world. Despite its size, it therefore has very good infrastructure and every modern convenience. It was very curious, therefore, that the island was hit by a long-lasting power cut that same week, and the torch that I had sent Abigail proved to be useful after all. Coincidence, perhaps, or maybe not. I leave you to decide. As far as I understand, power cuts like that are a rare occurrence on Jersey, and the experience proved to be a powerful object lesson for my daughter and left a lasting impression on me that God uses the weak and foolish things of this world to confound the wise, and even small and seemingly futile gestures on our part, when surrendered to his service, can be used by God for his greater glory. The next poem I would like to share was also written to my eldest daughter. She would have been about 7 around this time, and if you had asked her what she wanted to be when she grew up, she would have told you that she wanted to be a princess. When she came to visit us on holiday, she loved to dress up as a princess, as many girls her age do. On one occasion, she happened to lose one of the gloves that went with her outfit, so I wrote this poem to illustrate an important lesson. At the time, she said something which is seldom heard these days, but which must surely be the highest honour any parent can ever aspire to. Thank you, Daddy. I'll keep it for always. A true princess. There was a young princess, of fairy blood was she, who always liked to dress in royal finery. This maiden ventured far and wide, and made her home abroad. But though far off she did reside, she was by all adored. And when she came to visit those of her native land, her people thronged to see her. They were a joyful band. Her father loved her dearly. His firstborn child was she, and tried to show her clearly who she was born to be. A princess must have wisdom with which to govern well, and she must practice virtue wherever she may dwell. For it is not a palace which does a princess make, nor costly gowns, nor golden crowns, does royal office take. It is her kind and loving heart, her steadfast loyalty, not her clothes, however smart, which certify her royalty. So though you lose your hat or glove or royal gown beside, make sure you never lose your love and stay a princess inside. For the theme of my next poem, I chose one of the parables of Yeshua, which I decided to retell in my own words for children and adults alike. You may follow the story, if you like, in Luke chapter 16, verses 19 to 31. I've called it The Man of Greed and the Man in Need. A man with riches very great lived a life defined by luxury, while in the dust outside his gate lay a man confined to poverty. A purple robe the rich man wore, his clothes were always of the best, in contrast with the man so poor that in such tattered rags was dressed. The rich man feasted every day, kingly was his sumptuous fare. The fragrance blew where the poor man lay and told of the treats he could not share. His begging bowl was by his side, the rich man's crumbs he longed to eat, but he must learn to be satisfied with the meagre pickings of the street. Often the rich man passed him by as he raised an outstretched hand, but the rich man ignored the beggar's cry and closed his ears to his faint demand. He'd no time to spare for the fellow there, for he'd far too much on his plate. He was well aware it might cost to care, so the poor man would have to wait. While the rich man bathed, attended by slaves, dust clogged the beggar man's pores. One was anointed and given a shave, while dogs licked the other man's sores. Of God the rich man seldom thought, whose relevance he could not see, for he had cares of a different sort, like what dishes to order for tea. The poor man, on the other hand, had many a talk with the Lord. Who else would hear and understand? So his soul in prayer he outpoured. There was none to bury him when he died, so the dogs and the flies did the deed. His companions in life, they stayed by his side, and faithful took care of this need. But through the portal of the grave, his soul was welcomed in great joy. A humble soul, so true and brave, could not death nor hell destroy. To Abraham's side, his soul was borne. God's kindly angels carried him to where he would no longer mourn, nor hunger or thirst could harry him. The rich man also passed away, and mourners crowded round his room. In regal pomp his body lay, resplendent was his tomb. But after death did no joy wait, but blackest darkness and hell fire, and truly pitiful was the state of the man the world admired. In torment, lifting up his eyes to where deliverance might be found, a distant garden he soon spies, where fruit trees bend to touch the ground. And reclining in this paradise on the breast of Abraham, by a fountain cool as ice, there lay the beggar man, that in this world had known no fame, while the rich man was well known. Henceforth he'd have a lasting name, while the rich man would lose his own. Then parched lips parting in a cry, as the rich man sought relief, he lifted up his voice on high in his misery and grief. O Father Abraham, I pray, if you can hear me call, then there must surely be some way to grant one favour small. I ask that Eleazar may come, cool water to bestow, the merest drop upon his thumb, on this poor wretch below. An answer Abraham returned, but it could bring him little cheer, no hope of that for which he yearned, but confirmation of his fear. My son, a spanless gulf there is that these two places serves to sever. You have your place, and he has his, where you must each abide forever. In life he suffered while you prospered, but now your fortunes are reversed. For Eleazar has found the blessing, while your latter end is cursed. O Father, if these things be so, five brothers have I yet. Bid Eleazar swiftly to them go, and spare them my regret. But Abraham said, What need is there? They have the prophets and the Torah, a tree of life that all may share, if they will hear and don't ignore her. Not so, Father, for they have need of a more convincing proof. Send Eleazar to them with all speed, and they'll embrace the truth. Sadly, Abraham shook his head. What Torah and the prophets tell, if they won't hear, the very dead will fail to prove to them as well. This tale was by a prophet told to us who are the rich man's king, that we should not make gods of gold, but rather shun the rich man's sin. Not in this world, but in the next, our treasure we should lay in store, relieving those who are oppressed and showing mercy to the poor. For we are of the rich man's seed, and poverty dwells at our gate. If we turn from greed to the man in need, then for us God in mercy will wait. Though this story be so serious and give little cause for laughter, if we hearken to this story, we'll live happy ever after. The last poem I would like to read was written for a friend of mine on her birthday. She'd been going through a very difficult time and was struggling to deal with certain events that had occurred that year. If, like you, life has been tough too recently, then maybe this will speak to you as well. It's called Making Sense. The seasons turn, a year is spent. Who knows where the minutes went? One chapter of your life is done, another one has just begun. As you look back on your last year, so full of heartache, grief and fear, do you suspect you lived in vain? Would you turn back the clock again? Life moves on with quickening pace, and each of us must run our race. And time and tide for no man wait, nor can we bid life's storms abate. Do you feel burdened down with care, confronted by unanswered prayer? Or does life often seem unfair? Do you wonder, is God there? What is the purpose of life's mess, this tangled skein of threads no less? We're in the dark, we must confess, God's plan for us we cannot guess. But one day when our lives are done, God will reveal what has been spun. He'll turn us over and we'll see, not broken threads, but a tapestry. Or to put it in another way, we're each of us like lumps of clay, and the potter shapes and kneads on his wheel at frightening speeds. Then in life's furnace we are fired, though we may feel sick and tired. But when the potter's work is through, a masterpiece he'll make of you. So do not dwell on what's behind, and be not troubled in your mind. And let the future hold no dread, but leave it all to God instead. For he himself has gone before, and so he knows what lies in store. And Man of Sorrows was his name. What you've been through, he bore the same. So do not think you walk alone, for he will not forsake his own. But trust your life into his hand, and he'll accomplish all he's planned. Thank you.